Yeah, and you're back with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast, and we've got Don Sutherland on the line. G'day, Don. How are you?
Well, I'm, as usual, quite inspired by young Kevin.
Yeah, that's right.
How do I possibly top that?
Yeah.
One cannot possibly complete or even think about it with the Kevin, he summed it up, a lot of things up there very beautifully, as always.
Yeah, and he also, lots of things sticks to his shoe too. He, a couple of items that I had escaped me. So it is actually very illuminating as well as witty. Before we do start having a conversation, there was something that I needed to tell somebody, and I thought I might as well tell you and the rest of the people listening, a little bird told me that the government, the federal government's been getting its departments to look into ways and means of taxing GST on food, which I thought was a very interesting segue around the topic we want to talk to about, which is lessons not learnt by COVID.
Yes. Well, I think it is a good introduction because one of the main focal points for the next 15 minutes or so ought to be on how the food industry proposes to deal with the onward raging of the pandemic. But I think the big picture overall is that what is happening in recent times, not just in Australia, but in all countries of the world, is that we're being reminded about how shallow these claims are that the nature of work is changing in the 21st century. And I think that the COVID pandemic is showing that, in fact, there are fundamental ways in which work is not changing. Sure, there is the superficial and, well, it's no less the real for that, changes in technology and other management approaches besides technology to change the way work is done, of course. But at the same time, and driving those changes along, there is certain continuities, and the pandemic is showing those. And that is, firstly, that all depends on the ongoing exploitation of labour. In other words, in the context of change, there is a continuity in which how workers are exploited is the same as it has been for the last 250 years.
Yeah, you mean it's really exposing that the essential workers are the ones that are maintaining the system, and that we have a slightly hysterical boss class or ruling class at the moment, reflected in mainstream media.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think what we're seeing is, for example, when you read regularly in the Financial Review, that august journal that quite correctly Kevin calls the Capitalist Review, that you have, for example, just last week, you had a big lithium miner lamenting that there weren't enough workers. In other words, they can't get on with making a profit without workers.
Even though their press has been that workers are irrelevant and you should just kowtow and thank your lucky stars that you've got a job.
Yes, exactly. In other words, all wealth comes from the efforts of workers during their working time. And, of course, that wealth divides in the first instance into two parts, profits and wages. So no profits. There's no profiteering without workers doing the work. The profiteering is not created by the employer, but by the efforts of the workers. Another example is we've got now the construction industry, those champions of workers and workers' rights to have a decent union. They are now also lamenting and calling and saying straight up that workers are essential, that their construction workers should be defined as essential because they are essential to reboot the construction industry in New South Wales, because Madame Berejiklian has closed down the construction industry. Now, as you say, that raises questions about essential work. What is essential work these days? Food production is pretty essential. Food and water production and distribution is pretty essential. The society can't tick over it, over without adequate food and water supply. And however, that's the fact that that happens is not down to the bosses who employ the workers. It's down to the workers. So I think that it's a very interesting time in which the pandemic is forcing us to remember the continuities, not the changes, not just the changes that are going on in the character of work. And I think in our own way, Berejiklian and others, but Berejiklian in Australia, is actually confirming, whether she wants to or not, Karl Marx's approach to understanding how the society works, his theory of value.
Well, it's not interesting because one of the things that occurred to me when we were just talking, you were just talking, was the fundamentally abusive nature of the capitalist system that we live in. Like, it's abusive, as in the same way as women who pull a lot of the weight of society, the maintenance of society, are constantly figured in a fairly abusive system where which can culminate in domestic violence or violence in general against women. But it's exactly the same sort of level of abuse to workers, underpinning the notion that we have a society that's intrinsically abusive and needs And that is exposed to all people, all workers, and it needs to be exposed, or it is exposed in this ongoing onslaught around insecure work and low pay for people who are absolutely essential to the running of the system.
Well, I think it's very true that that women are doubly, at least, exploited in capitalist societies like ours. And that exploitation, wrapped up in that exploitation, both shaping it and being shaped by it, is, of course, that you basically have to own up and recognise that every woman in our society is at risk, both at home and then going to work, at work, coming home from work. The risk or the threat or the overhang of violence against women is there, and that is no less so in the journey to and from work and also while being at work, which is why I think it is entirely a major and significant development that our small union movement is taking the prevention of harassment and violence at work as a significant bargaining issue. Clauses that do that are very important. I think that's one dimension of the major crises that are happening in our society right now. This crisis where 50% of the population are not safe in the society. The reinforcement, if you like, of that is in the nature of exploitation when any worker is at work and any group of workers is at work.
So do you think that COVID is really exacerbating all the issues that were already there, a little bit like when the tide goes out, it exposes the rocks?
I do, actually. One of the main messages that enable the capitalist system to continue on the basis of some degree of consent, is that the heroes of that system that make it happen and make sure that all of us can live relatively contentedly are the employers, big corporations. They do such wonderful things, including in bringing in new methods of production and distribution, that isn't it all so wonderful for us? But what COVID is showing is it's not true. They are not essential. They are not essential for the...
don't tell them that, Don. Don't tell them that, that they'd have a crisis of personality.
Well, I'm interested in workers working this out because so many workers fall for this. They have an instinctive sense that there's something that is not quite right about that message. But overall, one of the problems is that the system ensures that workers fall for it as well, even though they are doubtful about it. And so, but the reality is that what the pandemic is showing, including the mutations still to come, will continue to show, is that the daily or weekly or annual reproduction of society depends upon workers, not employers. And that raises all sorts of exciting possibilities for the future. And also raises desperate messaging from mass media and employer messaging and so on that must disguise the fact that workers are the ones who reproduce the society. So when we come to essential workers, what is an essential worker these days? How essential, for example, are the human resource managers in a public hospital relative to the cleaners, who are the lowest paid, if not very close to it, in a hospital, but who are the real front line of keeping a hospital clean and safe? And how essential for that most essential of workers in a hospital, the cleaner, how essential is their access to the food and water supply that comes from workers in those industries? Are they essential workers? Well, of course they are. Still on the, just to be a little bit provocative, and I think about this every time I see 6 or 7 coffee shops within 50 metres of each other on a street. How essential is a barista as a food supply workers? I'd like to be convinced about that.
Well, there was a saying after 2000, the downturn, that there would be a cappuccino led recovery.
Yes, well, I'm sort of a desperado for a decent coffee myself. And, you know, I'm very fussy about it, but for my sins. But the point I'm trying to make is that there is essential and essential, but in fact, there's a network of essential workers, and each together, in the sense in which they cooperate, even when they don't realise they're cooperating, they are making our society possible on a day by day basis. Even though it's an exploitative society, which is built around the exploitation of those workers and, of course, the exploitation, the hyper-exploitation of nature.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Someone was telling me, this is a slightly oblique thing to say, but someone was telling me this very interesting story about how when the Twin Towers were struck, that it was found that some people were in the building and continued to work at their desks and send emails right to the point of collision, almost as if they didn't accept the fact of the reality around them. I mean, if they'd run, they probably would have survived. The reason why I bring it up, which is, you know, it's a horrible thought actually, but why I'm bringing it up is as people are dealing with COVID and the reassessment or realization of who is essential to maintaining the system, as opposed to the financial sector that generates spurious wealth, and policy makers that create wealth for big companies but not for the citizens of a country.
Well, let's look at a contemporary example of what you're saying
yeah.
in Victoria right now.
Yeah.
SPC, a couple of days ago, the food production, food canning production company in Shepparton, employs about 500 people, it announced that every worker who employed there, it would be mandatory, which is a soft way of saying it's compulsory that they'd be vaccinated, and that the first they should have, all of them have to have the first jab by September, and their program has to be finished by November. They're saying that it's compulsory to be employed there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, SPC is owned by two. A joint venture between two private equity companies. They took it over from Coca-Cola's ownership a couple of years ago, although Coca-Cola in the deal continue to get a share of the profits that are produced by the workers, even though they no longer own it.
Wow.
So this private equity firm, now anyone knows anything about private equity know that you're dealing with people who do not produce anything of value themselves.
Yeah.
Rather, they appropriate the value that workers themselves produce at a high, hopefully at a higher rate, so that they can accumulate more to make more.
Mm.
But the interesting thing is that we're in making this statement, almost certainly the SPC decision, they didn't consult with the workers at all. The workers found out when it was reported in the newspapers.
Yeah, it's pretty outrageous, isn't it?
It is. It's not just outrageous. It's a breach. It's probably a breach of Health and Safety Act consultation requirements.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's probably a breach, almost certainly, I've just read it again, a breach of the consultation provisions, which are, relatively speaking, quite soft in the... but nevertheless, it's a breach of the consultation provisions in the enterprise agreement.
It's also incredibly disrespectful.
And it's, without talking about the legalities, absolutely, absolutely. Because after all, it's the workers who produce all the value. And yet there they are, treated like mushrooms, really, kept in the dark.
Mm.
And so we have a perfect example in the food industry, essential workers, really are essential workers because they're producing and setting off the distribution of food. Not even the Pope can pray without first having enough food and water in his system to do so, which is sort of a pretty my graphic way of explaining the point that is so important that we grasp. In addition, one of the unions, the main union at SPC, of course, is the Australian Manufacturing Workers Union.
Yep.
And just some information from a report that they have just released, which is based on a survey to 850 of its members across a big range of workplaces. This is in New South Wales.
Yep.
Almost half of the workers surveyed believe that they'd been put at risk of COVID-19 transmission in their workplace.
Yep.
Only 39% said social distancing was properly applied in the workplace.
Right.
82% said that wearing face masks were enforced, but that gap of 18% who were not means that a fairly basic risk-reducing measure raises the level of danger.
It's really irritating.
Only 55% said their employer put extra cleaning, regular extra cleaning into their workplace. And in regards to consultation, about one third said that the employer was not consulting with them at all about dealing with COVID-19 in their workplace. We're a mandatory, there's that weasel word again. We're a mandatory, it's not because it really means compulsory.
Yeah.
COVID testing regime has been introduced. Only one third of employers were paying workers for the time spent to get tested.
Yeah, yeah.
And in workplaces where vaccination is required, in other words, there are already other workplaces out there not in the public eye like SPC's CEO decided to be, only 38% of employers are providing paid workers, a paid leave for workers to be immunised.
It's so just pathetic.
Now, that's union members.
Yeah.
You can bet that it's a lot worse than that in non-union workplaces, which, of course, is the majority of workplaces.
Yeah, they're just a load of freeloaders, aren't they?
They are, indeed. And that is the heart of the system, that a small minority who own and control are able to freeload, bludge off of the majority. Now, you know, without going into all the detail, of course, that's all in the context that the mass of profits relative to wages is rising, which means the rate of exploitation of the workforce generally is rising. And I might say that some work I've done on this indicates and, you know, raise this for confirmation from anyone else who's better at doing the work than me, but the indications are that the rate of exploitation of workers in the mining industry, so we're back to our lithium mine now, the rate of exploitation there is about six times bigger than the rate of exploitation in hospitality.
Oh, God. Unbelievable.
So now, and it's not good in hospitality.
No. Just speak to anybody who works in hospitality. It's pretty grueling. That's pretty grueling. All right, on that happy note.
In its most perverse way, has Karl Marx cheering in his grave because his theory is being proved to be correct. But of course, it is wreaking havoc around the world. And maybe one time we can talk about those countries, not many of them, and sometimes in some cases states within countries, are dealing with the pandemic with the utmost respect for their workforce and their people.
Oh, well, we will. We will talk to you about that.
And there are good examples of that because they indicate to us that the gross exploitation that COVID-19 is revealing and in a sharper and slightly different way can be defeated.
Thank you very much for talking to us this morning.
Lovely to join in again. Look forward to next time. Yeah. All the best to everybody.